Greetings and welcome to Mind Matters News. We're talking to Major General Bobby Hollingsworth, retired of the United States Marines, about his life, his views, and some of the fascinating things which have happened in his life. You're a United States Marine. It's very common to say Semper Fi, always faithful. But there's a deeper meaning to that, I assume, right? What is the deeper meaning to always faithful? What does that mean when you say Semper Fi to another Marine?
Well, actually, in reality, it means the same thing as that you're faithful to God, you're faithful to whatever occupation you have, no matter what you're doing. You're faithful to your wife, you're faithful to your kids.
Okay.
You know, it's the same thing. It's just that Marines understand that we got each other's back. You know, as I told you in other discussions, our job, every Marine is a rifleman.
Yeah.
And every other Marine's focus is on protecting that rifleman, making his job easier, keeping him alive.
Right.
Because he is the pointed end of the spear. He is the person that occupies the territory, that closes with the enemy and kills him.
Okay.
And so if he knows that all this, you know, we call it a tooth-to-tail ratio, all this tail portion of the other parts of the Marine Corps, aviation, artillery, medical, engineering, all this stuff is to support that Marine. When he knows that, he has confidence that if he needs something, that you're going to get it to him. And I was a commander of they've changed the name of it now, but it used to be called the 4th Service Support Group.
Okay.
And we have infantry. We have artillery, we have aviation, and we have the logistics. And the 4th Service Support Group was all of its logistics portion of the Marine Corps that supplied everything. My challenge to all of my people in the 4th FSSG was to be so in tune with the war fight, that what's going on up front on the front lines, that when the commander turns around and says, he bumps into it, regardless of whether it's ammo, food, water, whatever.
That sounds like the Boy Scout model, be prepared.
Well, it's more than being prepared.
Okay.
It's being prepared to support that Marine.
Gotcha.
Because that's the most important part of the Marine Corps.
Okay.
That guy with the M1, or actually M4 now, rifle. there's some controversy about that, of course, in the Corps about killing power. And just a quick little review about that. I may have the numbers not exactly correct, but in World War II, when they had the old M1, the kill-to-bullet ratio was about 1-7. You shot 7 bullets and 1 enemy died.
Okay.
When it got to Korea, it went to about 1-about, and I don't hold me to these numbers, but 35 or 40.
Okay. Was that because the North Koreans were on dope or tied up or something?
No, it has to do with the skills and capabilities
of
our weapons.
Okay. Oh, of the weapon.
Yeah.
And, okay.
You know, the skill set. You know, when you're, first of all, it has to do with the caliber of the weapon.
Yeah.
When you shoot a guy with a 7.62, he's probably going to be out of the fight. When you shoot him with a 223, he may not be out of the fight.
I see. And he's wounded and not taken out.
That's right. Wounded rather than killed.
Right.
And in Vietnam, this is astounding, about 1 to 200,000. For every round that we shot, only about one person got killed on the bad guy's side.
Okay.
And that's because you had weapons, one, that were not as powerful with enough kill power, and then you had automatic weapons. And boy, does that increase your logistics requirements.
I bet it does, yeah.
And it also has to do with discipline. You know, and you see film clips sometimes of guys shooting over berms, holding the rifle up above the head without aiming.
Yeah. That's like the gangbangers that come up and they turn their firearm 90 degrees, stupid.
Well, that's all about discipline. And Marines, I've very rarely seen that happen with Marines, because we don't teach our kids to do that.
Okay.
We teach our kids that when you put a round down range, you better have somebody in your target that's going to die. I mean, that's the importance of all this stuff.
Wow.
That's what war's about. You know, and that's one of the things that we need to refocus on is teaching American citizens what war is all about.
What war is out.
It's about winning and winning decisively and protecting our troops as much as you can so that we don't lose many of our troops.
That's right. You know, and one of the things that we do in order to make sure that we have enough warfighters is have the reserve. Now, after you retired from the Marines, you went to work at the Pentagon, I believe. Is that right?
That's correct.
And you went to the work at the Pentagon, and you were the advocate for reservists. Tell us what you did there.
I think this is fascinating. The employer support of the Guard and Reserve. And it's a DOD function that falls under the manpower section of the Pentagon. Our job is twofold, actually. One, it's to enforce or inform and educate the Guard and Reservist about the Uniformed Services Employment and Reemployment Rights Act,
okay,
commonly known as USERRA.
Yeah.
If you go into almost any business in the country, you go look on their bulletin board wall, and there's going to be a copy of USERRA on the wall because it's applicable to employers, because employers must treat those troops like they never left. You know, they can't promote.
So if I'm called, if I have a job and I'm called up for the reserves, if I'm an employer, it means I have to take that reservist back when he's done. Is that right?
And nobody can be promoted over him or anything. He has to come back an equal or better than.
And that's United States law.
That's USERRA.
USERRA. Okay. What was the acronym for USERRA?
Uniform Services Employment and Reemployment Rights Act.
Okay. So I'm an employer. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you're putting a bump in the road for my business. I'm really not going to do well because I really need this guy, but he's going into the reserve to serve his country, but that doesn't help me at all. But the law says that you have to take him back, right?
That's correct.
And I imagine there's a lot of headaches about this, but I think your job was mitigating this, right?
To make it as least harmful to both sides, as we possibly could. And so it was an educational process. First, we had to make sure that the employers knew about USERRA.
Yeah.
And then we had to convince employers how important it was for them to hire Guard and Reservists because of what they brought to their skill sets.
Oh,
military people bring discipline, their own time when they come to work. You know, they learn. They know how to improve themselves. They're motivated. That's what the military does for the mindset.
Yeah.
And so we convince the employers just how important it is for them to have Guard and Reservists on their staff because they're going to have a better product as an employee. Okay? So now, vice versa, what also I had to deal with was each. And we changed the concept of the reservist over the last 20 years. Now we call it an operational reserve. Used to be the reserve was just the people that would drill on a weekend a month, and then they'd go on 2 weeks training every year, and that was it. It was fairly cut and dried, and it was predictable. Okay, suddenly, when we started using the Guard as an operational reserve, we did that because, one, we had a better asset. Because now we were getting, in the Guard and Reserve, we were getting better equipment. The government was providing us with updated equipment. It allowed, now some of this equipment was more sophisticated, so we had to keep them on active duty a little bit more.
Gotcha.
So that they could do that. And then when we started using them in the wars, you know, then they had to be more of a unit cohesion, not only with themselves, but they had to be able to integrate with other units to provide the total package of warfighting. So that took more training. And so we started having to spend more time on active duty, not just the 2 days a weekend and then a 2 week in the summer. Then we started deploying them all the time. All right, now what that did, a company like Boeing or any big company that may have hundreds of reserves that work for them, if you take 30 of them out of the package, it's not a big deal. But when you got Joe's garage down here, he's got three mechanics.
And one of them,
that's a third of his
thing.
So now the way we were doing it when we first started this whole concept of using the reserves as an operational reserve, the guys had come to drill, and then the next day they had to, they were told, you're going to be called active duty and you're going to be gone till we tell you you're not.
Yeah.
Okay, so that left the employer hanging. They couldn't plan their manpower requirements to do the, what they needed to do to keep their business going.
Yeah.
So I had to do a lot of education and a lot of discussion and begging and pleading with the military part to say, don't do that to the employers. Use a little bit more planning, you know, so that they can plan. Because we got it. This is a one team, one fight operation. We got to be in this together. Because what they bring to the country is important to the country. What you allow them to do and to come back is also, it's important to them as individuals. So let's work together to make sure that we have as smooth a transition going and then coming so that you don't.
And that's what you did at the Pentagon.
That's right. Our organization was all over the country. We had 50 organizational employer support and guard and reserve units all over the country. And then the four trust territories, you know, Guam, Samoa, Puerto Rico. And so my job was to make sure that all of our people knew what they were doing, because part of that was, we called them ombudsman. You know, we talked about before, if there was an issue, we had people that were experts, we called them ombudsman.
Yeah.
And they would go and talk the legalese stuff to the people. Now, in order to accommodate and make the employers understand how important it was to their organization to have a guard and reservist in their organization, we would take these bosses out and wherever these guys were on deployment, and we'd let them see what they're bringing to the country.
Yes.
And also what, based on what they do, the dangerous situations that they're in, the thinking that they have to do, the planning that they have to do, it adds value to their organization when they get back into the
organization. I want to follow up on that. One of the things that the military does, especially the Marines, is they take, I think it was in the movie Paper Chase, where the professor came in and says, I'm going to take your skulls full of mush and I'm going to develop it into a legal eagle sort of thing. You take young men and you kind of get rid of the bad part and make them truly men. And this is one of the reasons that reservists are such good employees, is because they've gone through this process.
That's correct.
But you also have a thought of applying this to maybe the youth of our country. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Let's just go back to the, for just a second, about that whole concept of what we do in the military. It's not just the Marines. I think we in the Marines we're noted for being a little bit more disciplinarian than the other services. You know, we don't have as many amenities for our troops. You know, the Air Force lives in real nice BOQs with golf courses and all that. And I'm not degrading now. I'm just saying this is the way it is. This is a reality. The Marines were living in pub tents, and I'll give you an example. When I was in Vietnam, I was living in a tent. And we were eating sea rations, and one of my friends that was a thud driver, a 105 driver, he was an electrical engineer buddy of mine from LSU, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
He was flying in the Air Force, flying the F-105, and I went over to Korat, Thailand to visit him one time when I was in Vietnam. And here guy was living in a house that was air-conditioned. He had individual rooms in each house, with a common living area that had a kitchen and all this stuff. And they had maids and stuff that prepared all their food, cleaned all
their
stuff.
Must be nice, yeah.
That's good on him.
Yeah.
Okay? But I'm a Marine. I expect to live in the mud, you know? I know, you know, it's a dollar thing. It's okay. Where you spend your dollars. But the real dramatic part of the thing was he was getting substandard housing pay.
Yeah.
And I wasn't getting anything except wet when the tent would
and
be.
Money.
And money.
And money.
But I'm not downplaying the roles of anybody else in their role. It's just we do different.
Everybody's
we have
different
missions,
okay.
And we treat our people different. And we found that in the Marine Corps that it's very, very important that the first thing that happens when a guy or girl gets to boot camp is we take the me out of them.
Yes.
We become a unit.
Yes.
It's all
That's the reason you
cohesion.
Shave their heads and they all look the same.
Exactly
One
right.
of the reasons.
That's exactly right. And so we want people to leave me on the beach because everything else, the focus is on the mission, on taking care of your troops. Because of our, what we always like to say, and it's not necessarily true always, but we do forced entries into countries. You know, that's what the Marines' amphibious landings were all about. Is in the hostile environment, we hit the beach with a lot of high-speed metal flying around.
Yeah.
Because of that, everybody's got to be doing their job. There's no room for slackers.
Yeah.
So when we teach someone to be a Marine, we make them forget about themselves. We make them understand that the Marine Corps and their mission in the Marine Corps is more important than anything else in the world. And I've talked to you about before, one of the things that I think we don't do well is Christians.
Yeah, just for a background, both Bob and I are followers of Christ.
Amen.
And we certainly want to take some of these things that work well and maybe apply them to kind of a squishy church. So, okay, go ahead.
And this is my thought process on this whole thing is that the Marines are so successful in teaching an individual that is not about himself, it's about country. It's about God and country.
Yeah.
And when we as churches have convinced through biblical teachings that someone needs to be a follower of Christ, that me has to go away. And you look at all the tenets of Jesus's teaching, it's all about doing away with me.
Isn't that true? If you look at the 13th chapter of Corinthians where they talk about love, love is not about me. It's not about my pleasure. It's not about what I want. It's not about, it's not just about me. It's actually giving. It's kind of that Semper Fi, be faithful.
Absolutely.
Love is being faithful, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
And focus on someone else other than yourself.
Yeah. So how can we help churches today impose that on, not impose, but teach kids how to do
that? Well, I think we have to take a little bit more serious about what accepting Christ is all about.
Uh-huh.
You know, especially with young kids, and there's some statistic, and I can't remember the exact number, but when kids go to college, there's something like 80%+ of the kids turn away from Christ.
Well, they quit going to church.
Yes.
That's statistically true.
Yeah. Now, I got some friends of mine that are Muslims. My Muslim friends, when they were 9 years old, they were memorizing the Quran, and they were required to memorize it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and, uh-huh. and that used to be the Jewish people did the same thing.
Yep.
You know, that was a Middle Eastern kind of a trait, you know, that when you brought your kids up to memorize scriptures. Now, when you de-emphasize the memorization of scriptures, and not put an extremely important part on that, those kids don't get that importance anymore. You know, you got to drive that home. That's something that's it's not an inherent thought process. You have to be taught how important it is.
You have to memorize it, but also understand what it means.
That's
internalize
exactly right.
It. Yeah.
And that's what churches are about. You know, and that's why we have all these programs. You know, we got Sunday school. You know, somebody accepts Christ. We hope that they've learned why they accepted Christ in church, but in Sunday school or in what we used to call training on Sunday night, which they don't do much anymore. But Awana's, any of the other youth programs that they have are all about teaching these kids about Christ. Part of being a Christian is learning to be obedient, just like in the Marine Corps.
Any
military. Yeah. Obedient to God.
Yeah.
When you say, I accept Jesus Christ as my Savior, you have committed yourself. You have taken me out of your life and thrown it away and saying, Jesus is my focus.
I never thought about that. That's just exactly what the Marine Corps does, right?
Exactly.
Just what the military does in
and
the
it seemed
camps.
Like such a simple concept that why we haven't, as a church, started adapting those procedures so that these kids understand that it's not just a casual commitment to say, oh yeah, I believe in Jesus. There's more to it than that. There's a learning process. When you go in the Marine Corps, you're taught these things basically, but we never stop training. And it's expectations of what you need to do to maintain yourself as a Marine. Now, in the Marines, they always say, it's kind of the motto, it's not given to be a Marine, it's earned. Christ is just the opposite.
Yeah, that is.
We don't earn anything.
Yeah.
Christ has died for us.
And we don't deserve it either.
Well, we don't deserve that, but we have an obligation to be it to God, yeah, to his commands, and to show him that that means something to us. And I think that's a part of the educational process that we don't emphasize enough once someone accepts Christ as their Savior.
Yeah. So excellent, excellent.
I think we as a church need to be more focused on those things. Look at our programs and see. We don't want to be imposing too much. You know, we don't want to be pushy with the kids. It's time to be pushy. It's time to be disciplined. You've accepted Christ. Now you have to follow him. And there are certain things that are expected of you.
Yeah.
Because he's given you eternal life. Think about that.
That's a beautiful parallel. So hopefully that's some of the way that the youth education can refocus, if you will. Because I think many of them, and I'm not intimately involved, but the ones I'm familiar with, it's kind of like get together and have a good time. And that's...
sing some songs, you know, to play some games.
Yeah, exactly. You know, exactly.
Way more serious than that. And that's what we have to do is make people understand. And that's not just young kids, but other people that accept Christ at a later stage of their life.
Exactly.
You know, you just don't, it's not a casual thing. It's not just going to church. That doesn't make you any better.
No.
It perhaps will help you to be better. But we got to remember that the gospel is not something we go to church to learn. It's something that we go away from the church to teach.
Okay, yep, that's wonderful. Well, I want to end up with a story that you related to me, which I think was really fascinating, and that was at the Pentagon, your battle with having, was it a Bible study? Tell us about that.
Well, it was always any time I was in command of anything, and I could set the rules, and I learned this from one of the good friends of mine who later became a commandant. When I was under his command while he was out in the Pacific, his name was Chuck Krulak. And Chuck always made available an opportunity each morning to get together before working hours in a way that we could get together, study the Bible, and pray. And I just thought that was a fantastic idea. So I put that in my little book a repertoire that when I'm in command, that's what I'm going to do.
Okay.
And so I did that. And while I was at the Pentagon, I was every morning before work, you know, work started normally at 7:30, but at 7 o'clock every morning, before hours, no requirements, no invites, you know, you know, insisted on anybody doing this stuff. This is of your own volition. You're welcome to come to Bible study. And the next thing I know, I'm getting hollered at, saying, "You can't do that. This is government property, and you're trying to intimidate other people." Au contraire, sir. Yeah, we're not. All we're doing is providing an opportunity outside of working hours for people to express their love for Christ.
Yeah.
And they shut me down.
They did.
They did. And you know, and God bless them. One of the guys that wasn't even a member of our Bible study that came all the time, he happened to be a member of a Methodist church. It was about two blocks from where our office was here. And as soon as he found out that we got shut down, he went to the church and talked to the pastor. And then we started having our Bible studies in the church just down
the
street.
And that was close to the Pentagon then.
Yes. Yeah. Well, see, the Pentagon is... it's a five-sided building,
yeah,
but there are other buildings all around that house people because the Pentagon's not big enough for all these entities.
Yeah.
And so they got government buildings all over the city there. And I was in one of those buildings. It was a few blocks from the Pentagon. But so anyway, long story short, what I did was I went back to my boss, because he called me in and told me I couldn't do it anymore. And I told him, "This, respectfully, sir, that's not true." I went and got all the regulations and showed him that we were in compliance with all of the DOD regulations. But somebody had complained. And so somebody complained and said I was intimidating them because I was having this Bible study.
Oh, well, you hurt their feelings.
I hurt their feelings because yeah. I I was not. It wasn't an inclusive operation. It had nothing to do with what we were doing as a unit.
Right.
And so, after I broke out all the regulations and stuff and showed them that it wasn't true, then that there was no regulation that prohibited that in that aspect, then after taking it up the chain of command quite a ways, I had to go all the way to the Secretary of Defense.
Really? Who was the Secretary of Defense then? Do you remember? Okay, I don't either. He's probably the same one that spoke on your C-SPAN video. Bob's on a C-SPAN video where he was talking about helping the reservist, and they had a top guy there, and I can't remember his name either. So,
I'm sorry.
Donald Rumsfeld. Rumsfeld. That was the guy that spoke when you spoke about the reservist. That was on the C-SPAN video.
Right.
Donald Rumsfeld. Okay, so finally it floats.
I worked with him fairly closely. He was pretty supportive of our organization.
And so Rumsfeld said it was okay for you to have a Bible study, or is that right?
After we went through all the attorneys, and the attorneys gave him all the information.
That
it wasn't illegal.
Good for Donald Rumsfeld. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
So, but a few weeks later, the next thing I know, I get intel from the White House that that somebody had gone to Office of Personnel Management and tried to get rid of me.
Really? Because of your faith?
Well, because of me doing not...
Okay.
Being obedient.
being obedient. Who was president at the time, if I could ask?
President Bush.
Bush.
Bush, too. You know, 40.
Oh,
40,
that surprised me, that because he was a man of faith, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was
and
kind of
interesting. And he was the one that appointed me, you know, to the position.
Yeah.
But so I had top cover over the White House.
What a joy. God bless you for doing that, man. it's a rough battle, but it's a battle worth fighting.
Praise the Lord.
Is something better than, you know, not doing anything at all, which would
Absolutely.
Have been the easy thing to do, which is, I think, the track that most people would take.
But again, what I was so impressed with was people that weren't even attending that had gone to bat and just made arrangements for us to continue to do it in a church just down the street, which I thought was great.
Yeah. That was great. Oh, thank you, Bob. This has been a wonderful set of three talks to you. We've been talking to Major General Bobby Hollingsworth, United States Marines, about his life, his work as a fighter pilot, his work in the Pentagon, and what a full life you've led, Bob.
Oh, it's been a blessing. And I tell you what, I guess you should always, when you're saying I was a major general, I should always say I'm retired, you know, because I don't represent the government.
Oh, okay.
Or anything like that.
I'm sorry, I did not say that, and I meant to say that.
These are all my opinions.
Okay, these are all your opinions. By the way, we have a follow-up after the podcast, as the opinions are... belonging to the person who expressed them. So certainly we have that cover. Okay, thank you, Bob.
God bless you.
Until next time on Mind Matters News, be of good cheer.
This has been Mind Matters News with your host, Robert J. Marks. Explore more at mindmatters.ai. That's mindmatters.ai. Mind Matters News is directed and edited by Austin Egbert. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers. Mind Matters News is produced and copyrighted by the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence at Discovery Institute.